The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
This is our legal expert, Jeff O'Brien. He's a well-recognized attorney from Lohmann Abdo in such areas as business law, commercial contract disputes, intellectual property, and more. He also knows his sports and can lend his expertise when there are legal issues at play. This is Dave Harrigan, a well-recognized producer and update host from the Mackey and Judd Show. He's not really an expert in anything, but here he is to introduce the topics to Jeff and then nod in agreement every time Mr. O'Brien makes a great point. Welcome to Case in Point with Jeff O'Brien. Here's Dave Harrigan.
All right, thanks once again for the insult to the big voice guy there. It's always a little bit hurtful that I'm not an expert in anything, but you might have a point too, I guess, Jeff. I'm not really sure if I am an expert, but that's why we bring you in here, right? Jeff O'Brien from Lohmann Abdo Law Firm in Minneapolis. Today we are talking about probably the two biggest athletes we've had in this town in over the last decade plus. We're talking Joe Mauer, Adrian Peterson. We're talking contracts specifically with them and how very, very different they are, both the two of them and then just baseball and football contracts in general.
That's right.
Obviously, they're both coming near the end of the contracts. That's why we bring this up, and they're both very, very polarizing in this town. So let's dive right in, Jeff. Where do you want to start with?
Yeah, you know, Dave, and it's also, I think, you know, so two of the, you know, the largest figures we've had in the sports world here in town in a long time, and it's also two of the largest contracts. If you were to go back and look, I think these two probably, you know, tip the scales as to the two largest. And, you know, the reason we talked about this week coming up with this topic, you know, last time we talked about the collective bargaining agreements and just kind of waded into that pool a little bit.
It's a big pool,
by the way,
we learned.
And we just scratched the surface on that. So I thought we'd get into a little bit more, you know, a few more of the aspects of them in terms of the compensation. And this is a big difference. And, you know, you don't want to say it's a one reason why one team is doing well and the other one isn't, but certainly the Vikings definitely have a lot more flexibility dealing with Adrian Peterson and his large contract than the Twins do in dealing with Joe Mauer's big contract, and I think that does play a role in their current fortunes. So, and the interesting thing about it, they really have, you know, in some ways followed parallel tracks. These contracts were executed within about a year's time of each other. Joe's was in the early winter of 2010.
Okay.
And then Adrian's came in 2011. Now, they both had their share of injuries. Adrian had his off the field stuff in 2014. Joe has obviously not had that. By all accounts, Joe is an upstanding member of the community, upstanding citizen, hasn't had any kind of issues to that extent.
A couple of years ago, we switched from 2% to 1%. I think that caused a ripple in the mill community, but I think they've gotten over it.
Yeah, I think so. So, but just interesting, you know, how different these two contracts are, and it speaks to definitely when it comes to Major League Baseball, I think that players have tended to do better in Major League Baseball than they have in the NFL, and we'll talk about that. Now, Adrian's contract details, like I said, the original contract he signed in 2011. It was a 6-year deal for $86,280,000. It included a $12 million signing bonus and $36 million of guaranteed money.
Now, the bonus, is that on top of the $86 million, or is that included in?
I believe it was included in that.
So then get that plus the guaranteed, and that's kind of the number everyone focuses on, right?
Exactly.
It's the guaranteed.
Exactly. And then in July of 2015, so this would have been last summer, after he had the incidents off the field with his son, and had the serve of the year out off the field, came back, kind of made some rumblings about wanting to have his contract redone.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, Mike Zimmer, I think, was quoted as saying, either he plays here or he doesn't play.
I remember
that. And within a week, Adrian was back at camp.
Yep.
Because he really had no leverage in this contract. And that's typical of NFL players. They don't have they've come down further from the standard player contract, where they were making $15,000, $30,000 back in the 60s and 70s, but they don't have the same rights that, say, a Major League Baseball player would.
And that's certainly something we got into in the last episode.
Exactly.
By the way, if you haven't listened to it, episode 11, talking CBAs, about how the NFL, the league specifically, really wields the hammer over the Players Association when
exactly.
it comes to football.
Exactly. So July of last year, he restructures his contract. And it's now, and this is very typical with the NFL deals because of salary cap and other things. You'll get an Adrian Peterson or a Tom Brady or an Aaron Rodgers that'll sign this big contract, highest paid whatever position in the game. And then the next year they want to free up some space to sign some free agents. Mm-hmm. So then they rework the contract and spread it out or do something to with the numbers to make it work. That's why we have Rob Brzezinski here, who is the salary cap expert. We actually know the NFL teams have to have a cap expert to figure out how to make all the math work, right? And so Adrian's new deal, it's 3 years, $42 million. And this is kind of I know you guys have talked about it on Mackey and Judd. It's been the talk in town as to, especially with his injury now and his age and, knock on wood, the team's current fortunes, whether or not Adrian is going to ever play another game as a Viking.
Sure.
Because this coming year in 2017, when it becomes the third day of the league year, which I think happens sometime in March or April.
I believe right at the top of March.
Yep.
Yeah.
So at that point, he's due a $6 million roster bonus. On top of that, his salary for next year would be $11,750,000. So they're looking at a $17 million, almost $18 million chunk of dough going to a 31-year-old running back that's coming back from his second knee injury.
Yes.
And all evidence right now as they're doing just fine without having him in the offense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, given that, the odds are, as much as he has been an iconic figure for this franchise, it's very likely that Adrian Peterson is not going to finish his career with the Vikings. He's going to either play somebody else or just retire.
Yep.
Okay? Now, let's transition to Mr. Maurer. Now, Joe signed, he said, winter of 2010, 8 years, $184 million. And that's $23 million a year,
mm-hmm.
all guaranteed.
Yep.
Every penny of Joe Maurer's deal is guaranteed. He has a full no-trade clause, meaning that if they wanted to trade him to the Yankees or the Red Sox or anybody, if he doesn't want to go,
yep,
he can veto it.
He'd have to give the okay first.
Yes, absolutely. Exactly. And then if the Twins wanted to trade Joe, the new team would have to pick up the balance of his contract.
Mm-hmm.
Now, hindsight's always 20/20. It looks like a bad deal looking back, given his issues with injuries and he had that last year, 2009, in the dome where he was hitting for power,
yep.
knocking the ball out. They switched to Target Field. It's more of a pitcher's park, not a hitter's park. He doesn't maintain that same level. Fans kind of had the expectation that he was going to keep doing that. and then he's had the injuries. But let's remember back in 2009, winter of 2010, where you're coming off game 163. And he had a heck of a year, and the Yankees were sniffing around. I don't remember if the Red Sox were sniffing around, maybe the Cubs. There were a lot of big market teams that probably could have offered him more than 8 years at $184 million. And Joe, being the hometown guy, took probably less to stay here. Now, he definitely got as much as he could staying in this market, but he did probably take a haircut on that. At that time, that was probably what his market was worth. The point is, there's no team right now that's going to take on Joe Maurer for $23 million.
No, of course not. Yeah.
So that contract goes through. He's a free agent as of the 2019 season.
So one more to go. Or two more
two
to
more,
go.
Two more to go. Yeah. Yep, two more to go, and that's it. So the questions we have looking at these two contracts is why the heck is, you look at the grand scheme of things and you think, Joe Maurer is to the Twins, Adrian Peterson to the Vikings, they're the equivalent in terms of MVP status. They've both had some amazing seasons. They've both helped their team win. You know, in some cases, Adrian's, you know, has taken the Vikings further. You know, they've been to the NFC Championship one time during Adrian's tenure with the Vikings.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why is it that Joe is such a better, you know, contract situation than Adrian? And it gets back to what we talked about last episode with these collective bargaining agreements and some of the structures of the leagues, you know, in relation to each other. So, you know, I touched on this a minute ago. In Major League Baseball, and it's well known, there's no salary cap. There's no maximum contract. So you've got NFL teams right now that have a 53-man roster, and they have a salary cap. And, you know, Major League Baseball teams have, you know, 25 guys on their active roster for the first 5 months of the season.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's more money. You have to slice the pie up less for a Major League Baseball team.
Hey guys, this is Justin Musil, Pro Baseball Scout.
And Phil Mackey, Pro Radio Guy.
And we have the best baseball storytelling podcast on the market.
That's right. It's not us telling the stories. It's Aaron Boone on coming from a baseball family and hitting one of the most famous home runs in the country. Jim Brouwer telling Barry Bonds stories. Find Hardball Society on iTunes, Podcast One, 1500ESPN.com, or HardballSociety.com.
That's a lot of places.
Yeah.
We've talked about this before, but it's kind of generally accepted, and, you know, for reasons, it could just be the personalities involved. It's believed that the Major League Baseball players have had a stronger union than the NFL players. The guy named Marvin Miller, who was the director has been credited with paving the way for these big contracts that Major League Baseball players get today. So some information I was reading during his tenure, the minimum salary went up from $19,000 to $326,000.
That's good.
And the data I had was only through 2014, so I haven't seen what the minimum is today in 2016. Under his tenure, they established the right to use collective bargaining with the league, and they ended the reserve clause, so then you ushered in free agency. So there were a lot of baseball moved faster with the pace of free agency and some of these reforms that were more pro player than what the NFL did. Mm-hmm. NFL, you know, really you had Plan B free agency coming in 87. And then what about 92, I think, was when you know, with Reggie White, that you finally had this kind of wide open free agency for NFL players. And to this day, you still have with franchise tags and some other things. It's still not as pure of a free agency system as what baseball is. The other big thing, of course, is as part of that collective bargaining, Major League Baseball contracts are guaranteed.
So that's the big, I mean, that has to be the biggest difference.
Yes,
I would think.
It is.
I mean, if you're a baseball player, if you're Joe Mauer or you're, you know, Ryan Howard with the Phillies, or, you know, name some other big name stars that have gotten huge deals but seem to have fallen off the cliff.
Right.
You're still owed every single penny, and there's nothing the team can do about that, versus if you're a running back with a, you know, name your NFL team and they don't like how you're performing, or they think they can go in a different direction, they can snap their fingers and you're gone.
Right. Which gets back to, like I said, you know, this is, you know, it all comes down probably to strength of personalities involved. We talked about the last episode, you know, why does in the NFL the commissioner has so much more discretionary authority than, say, in Major League Baseball or the NHL or the NBA? And you thought, well, maybe there's some other sweetener down the road that where the NFL guys have. Well, here, the case just seems to be getting worse for the NFL guys.
Yeah.
You know?
It almost seems like, why not just go on a yearly basis? Just say, hey, pay me $20 million this year, and we'll talk about it again in the offseason.
Right. Right. The other thing too is the economics of baseball are different. Major League Baseball teams, they have a longer season. They don't have, you know, where you have the NFL, you have these national contracts where different stations have the networks have the rights to broadcast the games. You know, every team has their own local affiliate and other endorsements and promotions around that.
Mm-hmm.
Some bigger teams, bigger market teams, they have their own cable network.
Yeah, Yes Network in New York for the Yankees.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we know that the Twins tried that, did not work.
Victory Sports didn't last very long,
did
it?
It did not.
I don't think I ever watched a moment of Victory. Yeah. I don't think it ever made the cable company or whoever I was with at the time.
Right. So there's more. So you have money from those types of localized TV deals flowing into these teams' coffers, and so they don't blink at paying some of this, you know, more of this guaranteed money.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing too is, and this is an interesting point. Some have argued that part of the reason is that for a Major League Baseball player, it's easier to quantify their value because of all the myriad of statistics. And you know this from your involvement with coaching baseball. You know, there's how many different stats on a player these days at every level. And you can individually quantify a lot of a baseball player's worth in terms of how they play the game versus a running back or a wide receiver on an NFL team, that how much are they dependent on the offensive line or the quarterback? You know, if you hit 40 home runs, that's just between you and the pitcher.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, it doesn't matter what your teammates are doing when they come up.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't affect what happens in the field.
Certainly some things you could argue baseball, well, your batting average is maybe determined by you facing worse pitching, or you know, you happen to hit a few, you know, three hoppers that happen to make it through the left side of the infield. But you're right. If you're a quarterback in football, it's like, well, did your offensive line protect you? Did you have an adequate receiving core? Did you have a running game that defense had to worry about? Versus, you know, having all 11 guys say, well, they can't run, so let's see if they can pass it on us. We'll focus on that.
That's right. That's right. So baseball kind of lends itself more to individual statistics, whereas football, it really is a lot more interconnection of the parts. And so there's some that argue that because of that, teams are willing to shell out more to a player. That it's just like due diligence in any type of business transaction, right? A team has better statistics. A major league team can gather better data and better due diligence on a player, a prospective free agent signing, than say trying to figure out with an NFL franchise how much of this person's production is related to the people around him.
And I suppose for the player's standpoint, as far as a baseball player, you can easily point to any team that you're negotiating with and say, look, I hit 35 home runs, so did this guy. I want as much money as he did. Whereas if you're a running back, you can say, well, I ran for 1,200 yards. Any team can say, well, yeah, you did, but there's this many reasons why you probably did, and we don't think that you're actually worth it, or vice versa.
Right, right. And then the last reason that in terms of the kind of explaining these five reasons or top five reasons why they're why there's such a disparity is, you know, that it's easier for a Major League Baseball team to shell out a lot for a marquee player and then surround that player with cheaper talent.
Mm-hmm.
And to some extent, that's what the Twins have been doing. You know,
talent?
Well,
the Twins?
I should use a talent in quotes.
Air quotes in that one.
I mean, you know, we don't have the M&M boys anymore. You know, Morneau's gone. You don't have, you know, a lot of the guys that Joe played with in those playoff years are all gone because they found a place where that would pay them more.
Yep.
And so, you know, there's a lot of the reason that the Twins have had a lot of, you know, had been promoting a lot of guys from the minor league teams probably more quickly than they would like is because they have to, you know, even though there's no salary cap, the team has a certain budget as to whether they don't want to. I mean, it is at the end of the day a business. The Polad family doesn't want to be hemorrhaging red ink, on the team from a business standpoint. So there's only so much they're going to spend every year on player salaries. I mean, we talked about Victory Sports Network didn't work. You know, the Yankees have their own TV network. They can use that to fund.
Yep.
You know, spending more on free agents.
Yeah, and a great example of that is if you're a football team, obviously, if you're drafting a quarterback in the first round, you have to pay him a lot of money. It's just slotted that way versus, you know, for instance, I think the great example this year, the New York Mets, I think they were like 14th in payroll when it came to baseball. You know, that's middle of the road, but they're a playoff team because they have three or four of the best pitchers in the National League who are all brand new young guys in the major leagues. They're still on their minor league contracts, basically. They haven't been able to hit that big payday yet. So the Mets can, you know, pay them the pittance they get as far as major league stud pitchers go, and
right.
you know, they can spend a few other bucks on some other hitters to get them to the playoffs, and they're still midway or you know in mid range in the league when it comes to payroll.
Right, that's exactly right, and. You know, and so, you know, you look at, I think in the NFL, I think definitely because of the structure with the salary cap and the way that they structure contracts, I think the NFL, I think that's why we see the parity. That's why you can see a team do really well one year and horrible the next,
mm-hmm.
or vice versa. Whereas, you know, you definitely see a certain grouping of teams that consistently are in the playoffs in Major League Baseball because revenue-wise, they're doing the best.
Yeah, and payroll doesn't mean everything, but it means a lot.
Right, exactly right. The Twins, you know, came over to their new stadium. They had you look at attendance those first couple of years, the novelty has worn off. Nobody wants to watch a team that loses 103 games.
Well, you know? Some do, but
yeah,
they're the masochists of the group, I
exactly.
guess.
Exactly. So that's the last factor there is that, you know, there a Major League Baseball team can kind of patch in some lower-priced talent around a marquee guy, and be able to make it work. Whereas, you know, like I said, with these NFL salaries, you get somebody gets a big salary when you're a record setting salary. The next year they're in restructuring so that they can add more teammates. So it's really the opposite with the NFL, where these contracts get rewritten because they aren't guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's always the threat, right? If you don't want to rework your contract, we'll just cut you.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you don't get anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your guaranteed money is up, so that's it. So, you know, it's an interesting, the economics of these two leagues, and that's why I wanted to look at just these two contracts, because it does seem that as these two guys get older, the Vikings are certainly it's a lot easier for the Vikings to kick Mr. Peterson to the curb than it is for the Twins to kick Mr. Maurer, and some would argue that, you know, Adrian's had a lot longer shelf life than Joe.
Well, and Adrian, as you said earlier, he's due about $18 million next year if he were to come back for the Vikings. Put on your GM hat. There's no way that happens,
no,
right? There's absolutely no way $18 million. So it's basically, okay, well, the Vikings can ask him to restructure, and he can either say, yes, I'll do that, or I'm going to roll the dice, and I think I can get maybe not 18, but at least more than you're willing to offer somewhere else around the league.
That's right, Dave. I mean, if he could make the decision that he wants to, you know, finish here, play, you know, another couple years, stand down, maybe get another, you know, maybe with the way this team is playing right now, maybe he thinks that he could have a chance at retiring with a ring. I mean, certainly his numbers right now, I think, are going to have merit, you know, strong consideration for the Hall of Fame as it is.
Sure.
So then the question comes down to, do you want to take a shot at a ring? Now, if he thinks that the Vikings are the best place to do that, he may take less to stay here. But he's probably going to have a diminished role as part of that, because obviously, you know, we've got Jerick McKinnon, we've got Matt Asiata, they've got other guys back there. You know, with Joe, like I said, the Twins are just going to have to ride this one out for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, Joe made the decision that it's time to fold. I mean, he's definitely had some serious injuries in the last couple of years. If he were to decide, whether it be the stuff he had with, you know, concussion stuff or something else, who said that it's not worth it anymore, mm-hmm. he may, you know, stand down, but he still gets the money.
So basically what we've learned in this episode is it's good to be a baseball player is what you're
it
saying.
Is good to be a baseball player. They've had the benefit of good union negotiators, and they appear to have a better deal in terms of compensation. Both the amount and the fact that baseball still doesn't have a salary cap, and in terms of the guaranteed nature.
And I'm sure that's not going to change anytime soon. I know baseball's negotiating a new CBA, I believe, this coming off season here.
Yep, that's right.
Do you remind me, NFL CBA, do you remember when that comes up?
The NFL CBA is still in effect. Let me just take a look here at our little notes from last. So the NFL CBA is in effect through the 2020 season.
Okay, so they've still got a few years to wait before that might even change.
That's right.
Good luck with their as we discussed last week, the power of the NFLPA doesn't seem...
See, there's benefit in bringing the 3-inch binder every time when we talk about these collective bargaining agreements.
It is a massive binder. Not only that, your biceps look huge.
I know. It's been really a nice workout, so carrying this thing around.
Well,
so.
Good. Well, hey, thanks for coming in again today. It's been another Case in Point episode. Dave and Jeff here. Jeff, of course, of Lohman Abdo, a law firm in Minneapolis. Jeff O'Brien, make sure you check us out. Of course, iTunes, you can find us, 1500ESPN. .com, as well as Podcast One, and I won't forget it this week,
the Facebook page
Case in Point is on Facebook. You can check us out there, and we'll do it again pretty soon. Jeff, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Dave.